Hey, it's me, Mahogany Silverine, of the Mahogany Says podcast on Anchor FM. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First, it's free. Second, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast as well with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So what are you waiting for? Download the free Anchor app on your phone or go to anchor.fm to get started today. You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silverine, mahoganysilverine.net. Tennessee's Whiskey, the number one bestseller by L. Loren. Single father Weston Daniels has built a nice life for himself and his five-year-old son. After escaping the nefarious family business, all he wants is the peace and quiet of the South and the occasional, no strings attached, roll in the hay. But destiny steps in when he meets an ebony beauty who bombards his bar. Grad student Patricia Woods is on the brink of homelessness and needs some quick cash to pay her overdue rent. A redneck bar named Whiskey's would do just the trick with its notorious bikers and flowing tips. However, when Weston's past catches up with him, he is faced with choosing between her life and the happiness he desires. Tennessee's Whiskey by best-selling author L. Loren. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today. All right. Good evening, everyone. And thank you for joining me on the Mahogany Says Show. I am your host, Mahogany Silverine. And tonight I have a special guest. We are talking with Tirza Schaefer. She has written several books and everything from romance to goddess, stories. And she is this lovable lady that I met online on Facebook and just been a really great lady. I've been talking to her for a few minutes before we got on here. So, yes, she's awesome.
Irish half is cops in Brooklyn. So, very cliche that way. But it works, you know, they're like all together and they kind of, you know, get along and everybody loves each other and that. And she had a lot of support that way as well. And she went through college and, you know, raising her son with the help of her family and that. And, so she's now a mortgage originator with her own company, and she's bought a house. So she made something of her life, you know. And her son is working in the city, and his girlfriend that he's very much in love with, she studies law at the university. And her brother, that she always said he lives in California, you know, does something there. So it turns out she goes to Izzy and says, you know, I need your help. He's coming out of prison. He's been in prison. And because we've been through the social system with, you know, and he hasn't had it so easy. We've not been able to stay together. And the families he stayed with was really horrible and that. So, yeah. So, and his, so he got into the gang stuff, but he actually didn't take part in that which he got convicted for, and his so-called friend set him up. But, you know, as you know, the prison is full of black men who are unjustly convicted. So that there's another cliche there for you, you know, but I wanted to highlight that as well. And then Izzy goes like, he can stay with me, it's no problem, because they just got a tiny little apartment, you know, which is not even a separate bedroom. So, you know, so her future daughter-in-law, she's studying law because of what happened to her brother, and she, you know, she's a human rights activist and all that.
Nice.
she wants to go into that, you know. So the whole family loves her completely, and you know, they're always really happy to see her and that. And then Izzy says straight away, you know, I love you like a daughter, not even like a daughter-in-law or anything, but it's like you're my own child and I do anything for you. Mm-hmm. And I also trust you when you say he's okay, you know, he's got to behave himself or whatever. You know, he can stay with me. He can have my son's room, you know, mm-hmm. in the house. So she tells Izzy, yeah, he looks exactly like me. And Izzy goes to pick him up. He's coming in by coach. And then she's looking for this because La Shona, that's her name. Everybody calls her Shoni. Mm-hmm. She's this tiny little, really cute black woman, right? Very mm-hmm. petite and all that. So she's looking, Izzy's looking around for like this little guy. Imagining herself, you know, she's going to take him in her arms. It's like, I'm going to protect you and all that. And suddenly there's this like this huge guy standing in front of her. Huge black man. She's like, oh my God, you're big, you know. And he thinks like she's scared of him or something, you know. Aww. And she has to explain herself first of all. And so anyway, he's really happy. But how that unfolded beforehand was that she had a client that she does mortgages for, who is a building contractor. Mm-hmm. And he's part of a program of employing people who come out of prison and to, you know, get them back into society and all that. So he's taking part in that program. And one of his foreman is an ex-convict as well, who is like, you know, a really cool guy who's really turned his life around and all that. His name is Manuelo, so mm-hmm. he's of Latin American descent. And he then gets told by the boss to help Izzy to renovate the room for Dante, that, you know, the black man who's coming. Mm-hmm. And so there's some stuff going on, you know, they kind of feel that attraction already. So mm-hmm. he's younger, you know, he's, you know, they're all like late 20s, mm-hmm. like 28, 29, around about that age. And but she doesn't do anything. And then Dante comes and she's like, oh my God, you know, it's just like, I've had such a dry spell with men and nothing, even before that I was dating, nothing ever happened. And now I'm like totally attracted to two completely inappropriate guys. Yes. She's like, oh my God. So she runs to her dad, who's a police officer, to, you know, to the precinct. Mm-hmm. And she thinks, oh, you know, maybe I should date a cop after all. You know, that might be better than an ex-convict. Uh-oh. So there's this young cop standing there as she walks in. And she kind of ends up with him outside in her car on the, you know, in a parking lot of the police station. And and then by chance, the other two come along and kind of join them as well. So they're really jealous. Everybody's jealous of each other like that. And then Manuelo says, why don't we share her? You know, that's the easiest one. She goes,
okay.
Like, oh my
God. Okay. She's like, I can do that.
Yeah. So that kind of starts the whole thing, you know, but of course, that is a bit of a problem with, you know, with the family ties and Shawnee being the sister of, you know, and
right.
the girlfriend of her son and all that. So, Izzy is afraid that she wouldn't take too kindly to that kind of connection, you know, mm-hmm. So it does blow up in the end, but, you know, there's always a happy ending. So in my books, like, well, guaranteed, no cheating, always happy end, always happy. True love and all that.
Oh,
so, yeah. Okay. I'm more romantic than a Disney princess. Trust me. I've got the evil, filthy mind as well. So
well, it kind of goes hand in hand, you know,
together, you know. Together,
there you go. See, and I think that's why women actually read romance, because we can put those two together. You know,
exactly,
hope is romantic, yeah. But we want some energy, some excitement, some, you know,
yes, so true. And I figured if you have more than one man, you know, you probably then get satisfied as well. Well, satisfaction.
I agree.
There you go. Yeah, so that's easy.
Well, see, now everybody's got to get that. So Mahogany says, please pick up Izzy, the MILF Diaries. You've got to get this one. So,
And so, Rhea, when it comes out as well.
And Rhea, when it comes out.
Pre-order,
Okay. So you can pre-order it and they can get it on Amazon.
Yeah, it's not yet on Amazon, but on the other ones. So,
So what, in your opinion, is the most important elements of good writing?
The most important thing is to move people's emotions, to really grab their heart, grab their emotions, and make them feel.
Yes.
And you don't have to have the most eloquent speech and the best like style in terms of, you know, when you're crafting it and things. Of course, you know, I'm not saying don't strive for always getting better and improving yourself, you know, but it can't be dead. I know somebody, for example, who's got that like the most wonderful way of writing big words and all the rest of it, all the grammar, punctuation, everything is like right on the dot.
Wow.
But it feels dead. There's no feeling in it. And that is something you want to avoid completely. And the way you do is you have to make yourself feel first. You have to feel that. You have to laugh and to cry and to want to kill somebody, whatever your character is feeling going with it.
Yes. I think most readers would agree with that, most definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
That pulls them into the story and it makes them invest in your story because of that, because it's making them feel.
That energy is in there and the reader feels that as well. It's like once I wrote a story and I was on a scene that was really sad. So while I was writing it, I was crying my eyes out. And then all of us, and I had, you know, and I had in the background, I had Facebook open and I got a message and I was like, okay, have a look. It was a psychic friend of mine. And she said, I just had to think of you, and I just tuned in quickly. And I got this really overwhelming sadness from you. So, you know, I had to message you to ask, are you all right? So I said, well, actually I am, but I'm writing something really sad and I'm feeling what the
character is.
She picked that up. She's in England, right? So, and I'm in Germany and she didn't know she picked anything. She felt that emotion so strongly that she sent me a message and asked me, are you all right? You know, that energy.
That's a good connection from so far away that she felt that.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, and energy carries over space and time as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you put that energy into your book, that's going to, you know, the reader will pick that up.
So, most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's one of the best things about writing.
Absolutely. And then I keeping it authentic as well, you know.
Oh yes.
It's like I have been criticized about like my characters using curse words like fuck and that, you know. But it's like when two Navy SEALs talk to each other, they're not going to.
Well, of course.
Oh, would you like a cup of tea, dear?
No, that's not what they sound like.
So say that, would they? So, no. You know. And I'm not scared to use all that language, you know, it's totally okay.
But it's the character. It's
exactly.
Not, you know,
it's got to be in line with.
Yeah, it's got to be real, your character, and believable. And that's totally believable for a Navy SEAL. And they say curse like a sailor, that's pretty much what they mean.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, you know, if I were to write about the Queen of England, I wouldn't let her use those words, you know.
Yeah, that wouldn't even come out of her mouth, I don't think.
Exactly. So, you know, you have
not
to.
Not in public, anyway. So, what do you do? How do you develop your plot and your characters? Which comes first for you?
I get an inspiration and I see a movie in front of my inner eye. So it's like I'm watching a movie and I'm writing along. And that was how it first started. I was just writing along whatever I saw. And then I kind of develop going more into the character, going more into details, descriptive and things like that. Because when I was still writing for myself, it was pretty much like it was a dialogue, like a screenplay more than, you know, all the descriptive parts were like close to non-existent. And of course I had to develop that and, you know, and learn about doing that more. And then I started planning and researching and that as well. Like for instance, when I did Balcony Above the Sea, that was because most of my romance is military. And so and then I thought, you know, let's mix it up and put something different in. So I was asking, going into meditative mode and asking my higher self, you know, where's the next one going to take place, you know? It was Bulgaria. I'm like,
oh, okay.
Are you serious? You know, I mean, I'm a child of the, you know, I was born 71. I'm a child of the 80s. I've still got that iron curtain in my head. I know nothing about everything that was like former Soviet satellite states and that.
Right.
So I'm like, are you serious? And the voice said, Bulgaria. So I'm like, okay. So I started researching on Bulgaria. I knew next to nothing about that country at all. I thought it was Mediterranean. It's not.
No.
It's close, but not, you know. So I kind of, you know, so I started researching a lot about the culture, about the people and everything. And the process of which I also got into, you know, like LGBT.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Tirza. It's been really great talking with you and learning more about your books. And you can find her on Amazon.com. Most of her books are there. And she has 29 books, so it's lots to discover. And she also has poetry books as well as romance books. So you can also catch her on her website, TirzaSchaefer.com. And I wish you all a wonderful evening. Thank you for joining us. Blessings, peace, and love. You have been listening to Mahogany Says with Mahogany Silverain at mahoganysilverain.net. Thank you and good night.